This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, Head of Marketing with MorphVision. Today, we have the privilege of speaking with Etienne Sanz de Acedo, CEO of the International Trademark Association. Etienne brings a wealth of legal, academic, and leadership experience to his role guiding INTA, and I'm thrilled to have him on as a guest. Hi, welcome, Etienne.
Hi, Brandi. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, we're certainly thrilled to have you on. You have a very impressive background, so let's dig a little deeper. Can you tell us a little bit more about your journey, including your rich educational background and how it brought you to your current role as CEO of INTA?
Well, I mean, you're being very generous to me. Thank you for that. I'm not sure it's that impressive, but anyway, I've been the CEO of INTA for the last 10 to 11 years, so since 2013, which has been an incredible journey. Before that, I worked for 15 years at the European IP Office, EUIPO, in different functions, you know, starting as an examiner and then moving the ranks up to the cabinet of the president at that time. And prior to that, I was in private practice doing both competition law and IP law. In terms of my academic background, I have a legal background. I'm a lawyer as kind of background, but also, you know, a managerial background. I did an executive MBA at Instituto Empresa. So I'm kind of combining both, you know, management and legal and IP.
And having transitioned from practicing law in Spain and driving, I understand, also the corporate identity at the EUIPO, what aspects of your current role most excite you and, you know, you find motivate you the most?
Well, I've said that quite a few times. You know, my INTA job is probably, you know, the job of my life in the sense that, you know, leading a membership organization is an incredible experience. It's an incredible experience because, you know, I'm surrounded by extremely smart people, but I'm also surrounded by extremely generous people. So members are volunteers. They dedicate their time to supporting the organization and we do great things together. So, you know, this is really what motivates me. Plus, you know, we're doing a lot of different things and we're having fun all together. So it's good. Even, you know, during hard times like the pandemic, you know, we had some kind of fun somehow.
Oh, you have to have fun, right? If not, what's the point?
Agreed.
So you have a very global perspective and it offers a unique vantage point. Given your experience, how would you describe the current state of intellectual property protection today?
Well, I think, you know, intellectual property is in good shape. I think the protection of IP today is, I would say, is okay, is good. It could probably be better. I think, you know, particularly when we think about consumers, you know, we should pay more attention to consumer protection and particularly to consumer protection online. That's one aspect. The other one is, of course, from a company perspective, I think, you know, companies pay a lot of attention to their IP, but more from a patent perspective. And not perhaps sufficiently from a trademark or other IP rights perspective. And we should not forget that with the exception of the US, but still in the US, you know, 90% of our businesses are SMEs. And SMEs do not always rely on patents. Many do. And of course, you know, big corporations do. But I think, you know, there is one thing that is very clear. Not every company has a patent. Every single company has a trademark. So I think that's something that is really important. And then the last aspect I think is important when we talk about IP protection today, you know, IP protection is about registration, prosecution, it's about enforcement. So it means we need to have the right judiciary, we need to have the rightly skilled and trained judiciary, but we also need to have policymakers that do understand intellectual property. And this is not always the case. Not everybody understands, you know, the value of IP and the contribution of IP to the economy, to the GDP, to research and development, to social welfare within the different economies of this world.
What do you think in terms of, I mean, those are some very interesting points, and obviously IP law needs to adapt sometimes fairly quickly. There are certainly a lot of different emerging technologies right now, right, that are evolving fairly quickly. How do you see, you mentioned IP policymakers, how do you see IP protection laws adapting to keep up with some of these developments?
Well, I think, you know, To me, the developments are the following. And I always like to say, you know, we see new technologies, we see new players, and we see new consumer behaviors. And I think that's really what is happening today. In terms of new technologies, I don't need to list them. Everybody's aware of that, you know, Internet of Things, AI, blockchain, metaverse, blah, blah, blah. So that's very clear. And it's going at a path that goes quicker than ever, ever before. So that's something we need to think about. Just this morning, we're having a conversation here at INTA, and we're discussing that, you know, technology goes so quickly that now in kind of 2 to 3 months, you can see a major change. That means that everything that was existing before is going to be absolutely obsolete. So that's one in terms of technology. Now, when we look at new players, what is very interesting is that, you know, some of the traditional roles within intellectual property are somehow evolving. What do I mean by that? Of course, you know, we've always, you know, registered our rights with IP offices, but now we see more and more that, you know, some undertakings, some entrepreneurs are just registering with online platforms and are not even registering with an IP office. And that has to do because, you know, the product lifecycle is becoming shorter and shorter. So in fact, you know, the product lifecycle is much shorter than the right that is being granted. And last but not least, in terms of new consumer behaviors, as I mentioned, on the side of, you know, entrepreneurs, undertakings, not everybody's, you know, registering and relying on IP. But even from a consumer behavior perspective, the consumer habits are really changing. So the way we value, we recognize IP might be evolving. We see new channels, we see new habits. All that is impacting on intellectual property.
And you mentioned you're not going to go into all the different technologies. And obviously, there are many, many, many of which they're in the crux of the conversations all across the board. I have it on good authority. You also gave a very good speech written by ChatGPT itself. So you're obviously very familiar intimately. So with some of these technologies, there are opportunities as well, besides challenges with these technologies. What are some of those opportunities as you see them for SMEs and brand owners?
Well, before that, Brandy, because you referred to a speech that I gave at a conference here in New York, and I want to tell the story, you know, for the viewers of the podcast, because it was really fun. So basically, I was talking with the communication team here at INTA, and we're putting together the speech. And so I went to them, and I said, particularly to the director of communications, said, hey, JC, instead of, you know, doing a speech like we normally do, documenting ourselves and then, you know, making the key points, why don't we ask questions to ChatGPT? And we asked ChatGPT to build that speech for me. We're going to record that, and then I'm going to produce my speech in front of the audience, and then I'm going to ask the audience what they think about the speech. And that's exactly what we did. So, you know, I ended, it was a brief kind of, I think it was, there were closing remarks, and it was about 5 to 8 minutes. So, you know, I performed it, and then I said to the audience, so what do you think about my speech? Which is kind of surprising to the audience, you know, why a speaker would ask about, you know, the speech. So no one was really reacting. And I insisted, I said, well, did you like the speech? And I think they were trying to be polite to me, but kind of they said yes. And I said, well, guess what? I didn't prepare it myself. It wasn't produced by our communication team. It was done by ChatGPT. And we showed them the video of it. It was shocking to many people. And the reason why it was shocking to many people is because asking the right questions, you know, you can get a fairly good quality through, you know, AI. We all know that. But seeing that as IP professionals talking in IP terms was kind of, you know, eye-opening to many people. So that was the kind of, you know, small anecdote. Now, going back to your question, of course, there are challenges. I always like to see, you know, that every time there is a challenge, there is an equal opportunity. And here, you know, the opportunity with those technologies is that we need to embrace those technologies. We need to embrace the societal changes, and IP will always have its space. It's very clear that IP is contributing to research and development. It's very clear that IP is contributing to the social welfare, to GDP, to employment. We just need to keep, you know, playing our role and supporting IP. I go back to trademarks. A trademark to a company is like a name or a surname to an individual. You cannot go into the market without a trademark. That will always remain.
Yeah, excellent point. As we know, IP isn't just about protection. It's also about your business strategy. So how important is it for businesses to have a robust IP strategy? And what would you say are some of the key elements for a successful strategy?
I'm going to keep it very simple on that one. I think, you know, it's extremely important for businesses to understand IP not as a cost center, but as a revenue center. And it's really thinking about, you know, what is the potential IP could additionally bring to the company? So really looking into intellectual property as a resource. The moment you look into intellectual property as a revenue center, as a resource, you're going to keep investing in your intellectual property. And that's having the right professionals, the right teams, the right resources to be able to do their job. The risk otherwise is, you know, every time you're shrinking, you know, your kind of IP team, you're limiting yourself. And what I see with many CEOs of, you know, major corporations, but also small companies is that, you know, oh, our IP is one of our most important assets. Or, you know, yes, of course, you know, we value our brands. Well, but you need to translate that into the daily life of the company, because that's extremely important.
Yeah, for sure. Now, with the rise of open source software and other very collaborative approaches, how do you see the role of IP protection changing within the tech industry?
Well, I think it's definitely going to happen. I think there are many trends that are very interesting here. I mean, one which is not necessarily related to tech, but I think it's important to keep that in mind is when you look at, you know, overall filings, both for trademarks and patents, 70% of them are coming from Asia. That's a fact. Now, when we look into the impact of technology, you know, let's really focus perhaps a little more on AI and AI-related technologies. It's very clear that that will bring a kind of, you know, decrease in costs of IP and IP services, but that at the same time, if used efficiently, will allow, you know, higher profit margins, particularly for the law firms. So there is definitely an opportunity. I think what is very important, and I go back to the point about companies and really looking at IP as a revenue source and not as a cost center, you will need to invest in IP. You will need to invest in technology. You will be able to obtain, you know, higher efficiencies. And then what we need to think as well is how IP is evolving itself. And what we're seeing nowadays is, and I go back to the first kind of comment I made about, you know, new technologies, new players, and new consumers. When we think about new technologies, you know, we have blockchain as well. And what's happening is that we see more and more some companies who are not registering, you know, every right with an IP office, whether it's the USPTO, EUIPO, CNIPA, or any major IP office, but they're rather registering with blockchain. And that's even being recognized by some courts. We're seeing a lot of the luxury industry when it comes to designs, only the very final design is being registered with an IP office, but all the prior designs are kind of, you know, protected through blockchain. The other trend that we're seeing is that an increase of, you know, trade secret usage by companies, and that's something that is definitely interesting.
Certainly interesting and something to watch. As we know, mistakes can be very costly when it comes to IP. In your experience, what are some of the most common mistakes that companies make when it comes to protecting their intellectual property?
Well, I would say, again, the biggest one is not paying sufficient attention to intellectual property. So really treating IP as a cost, not as a revenue. And then, you know, looking into IP or bringing IP as part of the equation too late. And that's one of the big problems. I think also, you know, what is very important is to promote that IP professionals, you know, talk more and are more connected with the rest of the business. Again, I see very often companies really being very proud of their IP, talking about their IP, but that's not really translating into the daily operations of companies. I think that's something that needs to be changed.
So bringing everybody into the fold.
Absolutely.
And there's always a balance to strike. So how do you find the need to balance IP protection with the potential for stifling creativity and innovation?
Well, again, you know, to me, IP will always be an enabler of, you know, innovation and creativity, not the other way around. And of course, if we do not grant rights to the innovators, to the creators, then what is the point of creating and innovating? We need to reward that, whether it's through a patent, through another IP right. So And this is where, you know, the comment I was making before about our policymakers is so important. Again, situation in some kind of, you know, developed economies might be different, and it still depends on countries. But, you know, there are some countries where there is a strong kind of, you know, appreciation for intellectual property, recognition of intellectual property. But in many countries, even developed economies, you know, it's perceived as IP is only for the big corporations. And, you know, they're making a lot of revenue out of it, and they're leaving others out of the market. Well, this is absolutely no true. Those same companies are the ones who are paying more taxes, or contributing to the economy, or contributing to employment in a given country. And by the way, you know, big corporations, they need vendors, they need small companies, they need entrepreneurs to support them. So if we do not reward their efforts, we're not going to be able to help, you know, others to be innovative and be able to be creative.
Yeah, it's a full circle. As we fast forward into the future, what are your projections for IP protection in the upcoming 5 years? And how do you envision perhaps your role adapting in these forthcoming scenarios?
Cool. That's a big question. Well, I think, you know, that's going to continue growing exponentially in terms of, you know, the impact of the new technologies, you know, the impact of AI, the impact of blockchain, metaverse. We're still not there yet, but I think it has a huge potential. I remember, that's a small anecdote, but I think it's an interesting one. I was earlier this year in India, and we were speaking in the metaverse. So we had those kind of lenses. And in fact, we were literally, you know, in a different building from the audience. So we had the audience in one building, and we were four speakers. Three of us were in a completely different building, and the fourth one was in Singapore. And that was a conference in Delhi. And the moment you experience it as an individual, you see the potential of technology. And what was different to me, I could see my fellow co-panelists, but I could not really see, you know, the audience in a kind of avatar format. And even, you know, in terms of graphic resolution, we're probably, you know, at a 0.1, which could be at a 0.5 or a 0.9. The moment we'll have that potential developed, we're entering into a completely new dimension. IP will still be there. Now, in terms of what is the role of, you know, organizations such as INTA, we need to be forward-thinking. We need to think about, you know, what are the technological trends? What are the consumer behaviors? How the new generation is consuming products, services, but also content? And how is that going to affect intellectual property?
Perhaps in a few years, we'll see an inter-annual meeting in the metaverse.
To be honest, I hope not. I think, you know, and that's also, you know, something that is very important. We should never forget about, you know, ethics. And this is not necessarily about ethics. There are some ethical components that should not be forgotten. But what is very important, human interaction is kind of unique, and that needs to be kept. And when it comes to INTA and to the annual meeting, we already had a couple of years without an annual meeting. We suffered as an organization, and I think our members really missed that. We all missed that. You know, it's all about emotions. It's all about sentiments. And that is something that can only be, you know, felt in person.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that for sure. All right, well, let's dive into the startup and the scale-up realm. What three pieces of actionable advice would you give to entrepreneurs and SMEs in order to succeed at protecting their IP rights?
Well, I think for any startup scale-up, I think they need to incorporate IP into their very early stages of their business plans. That's absolutely number one. Number two, they need to right-size it. So they cannot go too broad, too big. They just need to think what is the right, you know, approach to them. And then they need to really take advantage of, you know, professionals, IP professionals, software that might help, you know, managing their portfolios. They need to take advantage of organizations like INTA or any other organization, because we're here to help them. And I think the more they rely on IP, the more they will see, you know, benefits in terms of, you know, their own growth. And then they need to think about, you know, what is the potential of the business of IP? What do I mean by that? It's not just about, you know, their products as they are or their services as they are, but can they think about new revenue streams? Can they think about, for example, brand licensing as an opportunity to them? That's the kind of thing that they need to think about.
Yeah, how to monetize it. And as you mentioned, make it more of a revenue center for them.
Absolutely.
So, well, unfortunately, Etienne, this is all the time we have for today, but it's been a pleasure. And before we conclude the episode, if our listeners would like to get in touch or learn more about the INTA, where can they go?
Well, they should go into the INTA website, which is very simple to find. So INTA.org. They can even contact any of us, myself as CEO or chief governance or chief advocacy. We're always, willing to interact with members and potential members, explain what we do. And Randy, thanks a lot for the invitation. It was really a pleasure to have this conversation with you.
Likewise. Thanks again for sharing all your invaluable insights with us today and to our listeners. We hope to catch you on the next episode. Until then, take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.